This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They have this Panther sound effect that is just the cheesiest, stupidest sounding thing. Big voice guy going, Panther goal scored by Sam Reinhart.
Where'd you get that thing?
I trapped it. Been keeping it in my bathroom at the motel, feeding it old pizza.
It's Mike Shope.
If you're calm, that wondrous big cat will be calm too. But if you're scared, that beautiful death machine will do what God made it to do. Namely, eat you with a smile on its face.
And the Bulldog. On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back. I'm at Roswell Park today. The Ride for Roswell kicks off in about an hour with their kickoff event. That's how it would kick off, with a kickoff event. I would think that's how you do it. Sal Capaccio is here in for Bulldog with me today.
But do we call it something else because it's on bikes? Like, when it's a football game, it's a kickoff. When it's a hockey game, the puck drops. When it's a basketball game, it's a tip-off. Yeah. What do you call when it's a bike? You don't ride off. What do we call it? You ride off. I guess you do. You ride off somewhere. I don't know.
There's a gun that goes off to start a bike race?
Sure, it can be. It doesn't have to be, but
can
yeah.
be. Some sort of a loud noise.
Right.
Usually a gun.
But, yeah, it is, today we're doing – they're killing it at the kickoff.
They are, so that's good enough for me.
Okay, we can do that.
They are. Chris Trapasso is with us here on site at Roswell Park. Chris joins us Wednesdays at 4 leading up to the NFL draft, which is, what, 4 more of these maybe?
Yeah, I think 4.
All right.
Month away.
Month away, and as Sal and I discussed an hour ago, I think we learned a lot in the last 48 hours about what's going to happen at the top. Agree?
Yeah, just with the Giants signing two veterans that are on polar ends of the spectrum when it comes to how aggressive they are, and they're both near the end of their careers, that they probably feel like the Titans are going to pick Cam Ward at 1. That is the odds-on betting favorite at this point. They did nothing in free agency at quarterback. They were in, and the Giants were in the driver's seat to pick Shedeur Sanders. I think signing Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston, it's a low-hanging fruit, but I think they're just not nearly as high as they probably would have liked to be on Shedeur Sanders to pick him at 3. So, yes, you're right. I think we have a lot more clarity. The Browns at 2, though, it's hard to really peg, and I wonder what you guys think, because you really could go in 5 different directions with position and prospect for the Cleveland Browns because they have so many needs.
We talked a little bit earlier about this, which is, sure, they need a quarterback. I think they need a quarterback. it would really depend, I think, how much they love Sanders.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So if they don't love him, do they go Abdul Carter or do they go Travis Hunter? I think it really comes down to that. If they really love Sanders and think he's a franchise-altering quarterback, then they take him because that's what you do with a quarterback.
I would say you don't even have to love him. You just have to like him to make it worth doing.
Because he's a quarterback?
Because he's a quarterback. Yeah. And then also it's the next tier of guys. How much do you like them? Because they picked first in round two. Mm-hmm. And if you liked Tyler Shuck or Milroe, like there's a pretty good chance you can do that.
Are we of the belief, and I guess I'm asking the question as the draft guy, but it proves that the draft is such an uncertain thing, that are we of the belief that Jackson Dart is going to be gone before pick 33?
That'd be my guess.
Okay, so the Browns probably can't say, let's just wait and make Jackson Dart the first pick of round two. The other thing that makes the Browns really confounding to me is the Deshaun Watson thing couldn't have gone worse. And in a normal situation, I think the GM and the head coach would be strictly on the or very much on the hot seat. We kind of have an idea that it was more of an owner's choice, that was not the GM and the head coach making that decision a few years ago. So for a team that has been so bad for so long that has a second overall pick, I'm of the belief that their GM, Andrew Berry, and their head coach, Kevin Stefanski, who has been a coach of the year in the NFL.
Twice.
They actually have a longer leash than most people in that scenario. So maybe they could take the longer view and say, let's wait until 2026 to pick a quarterback.
Maybe. I think there are some people who believe that Stefanski has to get back to winning more.
Right.
Like, and he was, but I agree with you that it feels like the organization isn't quite there yet. That said, if they don't take a quarterback, if they don't take Sanders, it's Kenny Pickett. So you have to wonder, what do they think about that? Now, I said to Mike earlier, I'm not discounting that Kirk Cousins couldn't become available still.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe,
good call.
Maybe the Falcons say, look, we paid out the money. That makes it easier to trade him. You don't have to pay him the extra money for a bonus, right? So I'm of the belief that that could still happen. And a lot of times something happens during camp and a team just says, hey, you know, you work something up. Maybe there's an injury. But there's always seems like a guy that shakes free. That said, I think you have to look at the fact that Kenny Pickett right now is their starter.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not again, if that's the idea that Kevin Stefanski has to get back to those winning ways and overachieving after they had a bad season this year, and that maybe he is more on the hot seat than I just mentioned, then, yeah, I think potentially, quote-unquote, reaching for Shedeur Sanders certainly is in play. But we've just talked about five or six different scenarios or philosophies. Are they more short-term? Are they trying to find the guy now? Do they just pick the quarterback because the value is high, or do they wait until next year? That's what makes a team at two, with the Titans clearly desperately needing a quarterback, and the Giants were a team that clearly needed a quarterback. We just don't really know what the Browns are ultimately going to do with the second pick.
I think that's right. Because it really could
normally
be.
Normally we do know.
You need a quarterback, you pick one. Because really it comes down to like what their pain tolerance is.
Yeah.
And what team has endured more than the Browns? You know, like, oh, well, if you don't draft Sanders, you're signaling to your team, your players, the world, like, we're not going to compete this year. Like, yeah, you know, fine. Like, okay, next. Like, that's been done. And, you know, maybe you have the worst team in the league this year, although they did do the Garrett thing. But
that was bizarre.
That can pay off, too.
I wonder, too, like, if they pass on Shedeur Sanders, and again, this is the Browns at two, I would assume that everyone in that front office in Berea would be begging and hoping that he falls significantly in the first round to kind of signal like, hey, we didn't like him at two, and look,
we had company
and he's outside of the top 10, and now maybe the Steelers pick him at 20 or whatever the case may be.
Well, could you see that?
I could see him falling out of the top 10. I could, and here's why, and this is not to say that my opinion of Sanders is the end-all be-all, but I think it's if you had a bunch of other draft analysts on here, and I'm sure you guys have, he's not a Caleb Williams or a Jaden Daniels type. Then you throw in the circus and his dad and the entitlement and some of that, that maybe a team, I thought pre-Geno Smith, I thought the Raiders would be all for that. And they would welcome, hey, we want more attention in the AFC West with Mahomes and the Chargers and now the Broncos. But it feels like ownership-wise, and Sal can speak to this better than anyone here about like how owners really tend to think, they would kind of shy away from that, or that would almost be a negative.
So I said the same thing to Mike earlier.
So you factor those two things in, where you could pull 100 draft guys, they'd say, yeah, he's a first-rounder, but not the number two overall pick. And then you get Deion, and then you get going on podcasts and complaining here and thinking you should get this and that. And that's why I think him falling out of the top 10 is not just like, oh, a 1 out of 100 chance. I think there's a distinct possibility.
I think you're spot on. I said the same thing to Mike. What I said is any team drafting him knows what his dad comes with him.
Yeah.
Like, in whatever capacity.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be a negative, but it's something you're going to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's something you're going to think about. And you got to really love him then to know that, okay, whatever comes of that, we're going to have to be able to tolerate it so you can overcome it.
What I wonder, too, is Shedeur Sanders has only had his dad as a coach.
Yes,
going back
correct.
To high school, Jackson State, Colorado, and not that Deion had to make a ton of excuses for him, and he really developed at the small school level and then goes to Colorado and played well, but I wonder if maybe, whether it's the Browns at two, whether it's, you know, any other team, the Saints, the Jets, if maybe their GM's like, all right, we'll pick him, and the coach is like, I don't know if this guy's going to be ready to be coached particularly hard by someone who is not his dad. Now, I will say Deion hasn't necessarily, you know, spoon-fed everything to him, and he's made comments that, you know, his other son is more of his favorite, and he loves Travis Hunter like his son, things like that. But I wonder how that is factoring into the evaluation process of a guy that's only had his dad as a head coach.
With Chris Trapasso, Mike Shope, Sal Capaccio here at Roswell Park today, you put Shedeur Sanders in your mock draft today at 9.
Saints, right?
To New Orleans.
Okay.
You mentioned the Jets there, too, at 7. Could see it. Saints could see it. I've liked Seattle. Now, this is 18, and I've never been thinking about Sanders at 18, but Seattle is a quarterback team behind Darnold. That could be Dart, maybe. There's Pittsburgh. I'm assuming Rodgers for Pittsburgh, but then a rookie, Dart, even Sanders to go with him.
How about that tandem? If we get Aaron Rodgers and Shedeur Sanders in Pittsburgh, that would really test That's, Mike Tomlin's ability to manage a locker room and manage personalities.
That'd I suppose.
Fun. That'd be a lot of fun.
I think the one player outside now of Cam Ward that I've seen linked to the same team as much as anyone is Gentry going to the Raiders.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Go to the Raiders. That's outside of Ward. If you go down the list, that's the guy that I see linked to him, and you have him. You have him,
yes.
By the way. That's why I'm at 6.
At 6 overall, the running back from Boise State that is, you know, sensational, coming off almost breaking Barry Sanders' record. The speed is there, and that was an offense that you don't necessarily want to fix your run game by just drafting a running back in the first round. You can ask the Steelers about that or the Jaguars about that when they picked Najee Harris and Travis Etienne a few years ago. But Genty is a special talent. The offensive line is better. And I think, like I mentioned, I thought they were going to go more the Shedeur Sanders route. Tom Brady, Chip Kelly, Pete Carroll, changing the identity, splashier. They've been kind of this bottom-of-the-barrel team in this really competitive AFC West. That would make a lot of sense to pick maybe the first true skill position player off the board, Ashton Janti at 6.
Yeah. You know, it's all we've been in, had this conversation many times, like a running back, but he sounds so good. And the other stuff, you know, the superficial, more superficial elements of it, Vegas and and Brady and all that. Like I get it. I think I would like it more if they went for McMillan at 6, but I'm not sure he's that good. Like, he's not everybody's favorite prospect, wide receiver from Arizona.
Yeah, so I have...
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Him going 12 to the Cowboys, that's another team that, like the Raiders, that you point out needs a big outside wide receiver. In McMillan, what I would say, and what has been my one-sentence comparison, is that he is between T. Higgins and Drake London. That's the kind of player he is. Now, T. Higgins just got a huge contract. Drake London's been, with better quarterback play, a solid number one. But you're right. Normally, inside the top three, five, seven, it's the Ja'Marr Chase, it's the Jaylen Waddle types, and that's just not, in terms of separation and explosion, that's not what you get with Tet McMillan.
I'll take it, though. You tell me I'm taking a guy that's having that career.
Okay.
If I'm taking him, I would take him that high. I mean, if you guarantee me right now he would turn into one of those guys, I think it's worth it.
I mean, London did go that high, you know, himself.
He was eighth, so. I think, yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just, I don't know, given the 40 time and, you know, the testing on where that is, he's a super polarizing prospect.
Yeah, because we're in this age of the NFL where it's all about separation ability and quickness, and we've seen the wide receiver position get smaller and skinnier, and that's totally fine. That the Jordan Addisons and the Smith and Jigbas going in the first round are 180, 175 pounds. Tet McMillan, 6'4", 220, ran in the 4.5s at the Arizona Pro Day. You're right. He's not going to burn down the field. He's not going to be, wow, how did he get so open? He wins with boxing out. He wins in contested catch situations and after the catch.
You move Jaden Higgins, speaking of wide receivers, into the first round to Green Bay at pick 23. So that'd be wide receiver three, not counting Hunter. McMillan.
I think he had Golden in there,
Golden,
too.
Mm-hmm. And yep. Then Higgins. Yep. He's got some steam lately.
And if, yes, he has. And if you want to look, check his combine workout. He tested through the roof. He is the other big-bodied wide receiver, and maybe he doesn't ultimately go this high, but if you want the X receiver that plays on the perimeter, runs, I think, better routes than Tet McMillan and can get open, check the combine workout. I don't remember all of his specific...
Jaden Higgins?
Higgins.
4.47, 39 vertical, 128 broad. But Jalen Nolan has even better. Jalen Nolan.
Yes, his teammate.
Holy cow, 41.5.
He's a little vertical slot receiver, and he gets
4.39.
Yeah, absolutely. Both those Iowa State receivers, but I think Higgins being that big, 4.47 compared to McMillan at 4.53, the explosiveness is there, and legitimate ability, unlike McMillan, to get open with his route running nuance and athleticism. The first round to me is this, like every year at the end of the first round, I'm like, man, so many of these workout warriors went in the back half of the first round where we're not really sure. We always say there's 15 to 16 blue chip guys or 10 blue chip guys. Then there's always those surprise names that go in the first round late. I could see Jaden Higgins being that guy.
I'm sure you're familiar with Scott Barrett. Mm-hmm. He was on with me last week.
He's great.
He's really good. Yeah, he's really good. And he this is really condensing it, but like your 40 time is the least predictive trait or stat in your profile. So, who was Restrepo for Miami ran like 4.9, and then he did say I shouldn't have run maybe because I had a hamstring thing. He sort of made that excuse yesterday. I'd say it wasn't true. So that kind of stays with me. Last year with Barrett, we had the yards per route run problem.
Because when you have two receivers like Neighbors and Thomas,
right,
that's the flaw. And I was talking with Jeremy, like I was texting with Jeremy about this over the weekend. That's a good predictor, but when you have two guys like the LSU players, you're going to have those yards per route run numbers be lower. But typically, so maybe that's going to be the case if you look at yards per route run with Higgins and Noel from Iowa State. They're both probably a little bit lower. You'd maybe even boost them a little bit because they're playing with a legitimate NFL player opposite them on that offense.
This was A.D. Mitchell last year,
too. Oh, A.D. Mitchell.
As well as Thomas.
Yep.
But while we're on receivers, I want your thought on Isaiah Bond. It came out, Ryan Talbot and others reported today. The Bills had a private workout, met with him.
Ooh.
Took him to dinner, I guess. I mean, they've met with him in some capacity more than what you would have just a regular visit.
Sure.
Okay? So for whatever reason, the Bills are connected to Isaiah Bond a little bit more today and over the last 24 to 48 hours. Give us your thought.
Yeah, that is really fascinating because he is – I mean, I think Josh Palmer fits this role to a certain degree. But Isaiah Bond being 4.39 that's certainly what the Bills, I mean, Brandon Bean spoke to this, Sean McDermott spoke to this, like that the Bills need more downfield vertical ability. So at 4.39, Isaiah Bond has that. Then you watch him on film, and we're talking about separation ability. McMillan doesn't really have it. Higgins better. Isaiah Bond is a route salesman. He knows how to sell a dig route that turns into an outbreaking route. He runs post corners. There's the kind of, I mean, I guess in draft circles, famous play where he scores a touchdown this year, or I guess this past season at Texas, near the goal line. stems to the inside, gets his face mask turned to the side, and like readjusts his face mask as he's running toward the back pylon, completely leaves the defensive back in the dust, catches the touchdown. He's a legitimate separator too. So that's not just a, you know, the Bills are meeting with some fifth or sixth rounder. He's someone that certainly can get open and has the vertical speed to be someone that the Bills could ultimately pick maybe day two or with one of those fourth round picks.
Also, I learned today you're a Jack Besh guy.
Adore Jack Besh.
So this adore is the famous thing on him is the 21 LSU team.
Yes. I just talked about that today on a different podcast.
All right, with all the names on it. But he led those names in catches?
Yes. Neighbors was on that team.
Thomas
was on that team. They didn't have Jaden Daniels as their quarterback yet. But he led that LSU team as a freshman with 43 catches, which is kind of speaks to how low volume that LSU wide receiver group or passing offense was. But doing that as a freshman, I am a big believer. I know we're in this age where, hey, everyone's older now. All these prospects are 24. No one cares. For me, and if I'm Brandon Bean or I'm trying to run a draft room, I'm looking for those guys that showed promise at 18, 19 years old who are not only dominating in their age 23 or 24 season. And Besh did that at LSU, did not have good quarterback play at TCU, but still went over 1,000 yards last season. Yards after the catch is stupendous. And I think we witnessed this firsthand watching Bills-Rams. The Puka Nacua type with a body on him. How did he reel that in? Jack Besh did that repeatedly last season because a lot of the passes that were thrown his way were not very accurate.
And if I can, just so the listeners are familiar, and the viewers, by the way, hi, everybody. Jack Besh is the brother of, Tiger. Thank you. It's Martin is his name. Tiger's his nickname. Mm-hmm. Martin Tiger Besh, who was killed in the New Orleans terror attack, actually, a little bit before the Senior Bowl. Yep. I think it was a Senior Bowl. And then Jack Besh did he had the winning touchdown.
In the Senior Bowl.
And he had the emotional interview, but he is the brother of Tiger Besh, who was killed in New Orleans.
21 LSU. Kayshon Boutte was a pretty good draft pick.
Trey Palmer was on that team,
and Trey Palmer. Who is this quarterback? Max Johnson.
I think he's transferred a bunch of times and didn't ultimately, obviously, do it.
He's not in the league, huh?
He's not in the league, I don't think so. I don't think that was Garrett Nussmeier yet.
So here's Bulldog going away on the occasion of the Ride for Roswell kickoff event. He's the captain of the WGR Ride for Roswell team. And on the occasion, you know what I'm going to say? Emmanuari.
Oh, yeah. So I have the Bills trading up for Nick Emmanuari.
And he's not here to revel in it.
Does he love it or hate it?
He loves the player.
He loves the player.
He would love this.
Okay.
I think.
So after I have to do the caveat where whenever I'm talking about a mock draft that I do one per week at CBS all season. So try and now that we're a month away, you try to get as close as you can to actually predicting what's going to ultimately happen. But that wouldn't be the biggest need. Of course, defensive tackle, corner, edge, we all understand that. But Emmanuari, with that workout and the production that he had on the football, pass breakups, interceptions, relative to how frequently he was covered, he would be someone where I could see Brandon Bean being like, he was the last first rounder that we had on the board. We have 10 picks. We don't have 10 spots on the roster, even though we have more needs on defense. We're like, similar to what he said and how he seemingly or he supposedly felt about Dalton Kincaid, that they're like, hey, let's just trade a few of these mid-rounders to get someone that could ultimately be a true dynamic playmaker at a very important position in Sean McDermott's defense.
I like that point. I've said that I just don't see them taking a safety because they like what they have in Cole Bishop. But more than anything, it's the biggest position on the field that this regime has always, there is no exception, has always operated that they like guys who know the system.
Yep.
And you can go back to signing Dean Marlowe.
They signed him back, right?
All the time. I mean, right? They traded for him, I think it was. I don't even know if they did or not, whatever. But it was right around then. But it's not just him. It's guys they brought in just over the last several years. Kurt Coleman came back, I think, or came for Sean McDermott, right? This is a position they've always operated where they want guys who've been in their system or know their system. Mike Edwards didn't make the team last year. He did, but then he was hurt and getting released. So I get what you're saying, and I don't disagree that if they have that philosophy about the draft and say, we'll just deal with it, But even if that happens, I don't know if he's playing in year one that much, to be honest with you.
No, that's a great point. I guess also with this, beyond trying something different and thinking of what I just mentioned about maybe him being the last first-round, quote-unquote, prospect that the Bills could have on their board, it was this philosophy, and I think I said this last week, that I have a thought, and maybe, Sal, you could speak to this if you know, that the Bills want to get more explosive all over the field, that they have had those Dean Marlowes that are on, you know, the bottom part of the roster, but even the Jordan Poyers and the Micah Hydes, who are not, even Trey White was not a 4-3 guy with a 40-inch vertical that could fit in the scheme and be in the right position often. I think with the Michael Hoyt signing, Joey Bosa, even Larry Ogunjobi, I think they realize we kind of need, like, some more dudes that then we can plug into this great scheme.
That's why they signed Derek Forrest.
And Derek Forrest,
I think
too.
Derek Forrest fits in that mold.
What
you're talking about.
Yes.
You watch his highlights, he's lighting somebody up.
Yes.
Right?
And
he's getting beat deep, maybe.
Yeah. But that he is someone that ran in the mid-4.4s. He had a big vertical where I feel like they've been able, and they know, like, to what Sal was saying, they understand we can, like, create turnovers with lesser players in this scheme. It's complex. We trust Bobby Babich is dealing with the linebackers and the safeties. Let's get a 4.39 guy with a 40-inch vertical and see where his ceiling ultimately could be. And that would be Amanwari, for sure.
Chris Trapasso, our weekly guest here on WGR, going to stick around for the rest of the hour. We're live at Roswell Park, the Ride for Roswell kickoff event. RideForRoswell.org. We'll have a couple of guests from Roswell Park on later in the show. Also, you can ride in the event, of course, but also donate if you're not a rider, or just volunteer at the event, which is at the end of June. More with Chris, and your calls are welcome, too, at 803-0550. Mike Shope, Sal Capaccio from Roswell Park. This is WGR.